Now more Tune Up with Deb, produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George. Let's send it back to your host, Deb Ross.
My guest today is Trevor Slaney. He is a lawyer who specializes in estate planning. He's with Hoge Slaney Lawyers. Just before the break, we were talking about estate planning, but we've really been focusing on wills, and it seems like we've got a lot to talk about concerning wills, so we'll see how much longer we stay on that topic. But Trevor, I'm curious about questions that we should be asking ourselves before we prepare a will, or perhaps is there something that we should prepare ahead of coming into and seeing a lawyer such as yourself in order to prepare a will?
I tell people to just get a good understanding of what they have, where it is, what it's worth, and whose name it's in. So have a look at your bank accounts and have a look at your bank records and remember if you've put your child's name on an account or if you've got this account in joint names or not, or if that account's in your name because it was money from an inheritance or whatever. Don't have no idea of what's in accounts and who your beneficiaries are and things like that. So just have a good look and know what you have. You don't need to restructure anything. Leave that until you get the advice from the planning lawyer. But just know what you have so that you're not scrambling after the meeting to go and fill in a whole bunch of blanks.
So is it best to bring a list or to bring statements?
Usually my clients, what they'll do is they'll bring their latest bank and investment account statements so that they'll know those answers. And then they'll probably bring in their BC property assessment so they know roughly what their house might be worth. And usually it'll allow me to know whose name the house is in, things of that nature. More complicated, you know, people with companies and whatnot, then they'll probably bring in some other documents. But most people, if they bring in their property assessment and their banking documents and their investment documents, that's enough. That's enough. And we'll have enough to go on there for sure.
At very least, it gets the ball rolling.
It sure does, yeah.
So I'm going to ask you questions in regards to the executor-executrix responsibility. And this is a vast responsibility in most cases, even just the burden of being that for someone who has passed and you're responsible for so many details. Talk to us about what goes in a person's mind. What's the process for choosing that executor-executrix and what type of responsibilities are on their plate at a time of such loss?
It's a huge job. If you've named somebody very close to you, you have to think and you have to realize these people are going to be mourning your loss. So you have to think about that as well. But there's a lot of responsibility. There's an awful lot of liability if you do things improperly. Too many people wait until it's too late to come see the lawyer. They've already done a whole bunch of things. They've done them sometimes wrong. Sometimes they've exposed themselves. Sometimes they've agreed to do an estate that they never should have done in the first place.
You're speaking about the executor or the executrix doing things that they're liable for, and then they go see a lawyer after the fact.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Now I'm tracking with
so,
you.
Yeah, so that happens too often. But okay, so back to the, you're trying to pick an executor. Who should you pick? Okay, so I think the qualities of a good executor. You want somebody who's competent, who can have the conversation that you and I are having here right now. You want somebody who's not too competent. By that, I mean not a know-it-all. That's one of the most dangerous executors you can pick. Somebody who says, I don't need a lawyer. I can figure this out on my own. I don't need somebody to do the taxes. I can do taxes. I've done taxes before. Why would I pay a realtor to sell mom's house? I can do that myself. That's a very dangerous executor. So you want a level of competency for sure, but you don't want to know it all, definitely. You want somebody who's honest. You have to have somebody who has integrity. You want somebody who's respected by the family members. If it's one of the children, then you need somebody who commands respect from the other children. Let's see. I look for solid marriages. You know, that too many times I've seen people pick a child as their executor, and really the whole thing is run by the person's spouse. And that causes friction in the family and whatnot. And or maybe there's you don't want to pick an executor as well who has tremendous money issues, because then there's pressure to skip things, to cut corners, and to try to get the money faster. And that just puts everybody at risk. So there's all kinds of qualities of who is a good executor. And people should realize that it doesn't have to be one of the children. And for goodness sakes, it doesn't have to be the oldest child. So many people think, I can't name anybody but the oldest child. I'll upset them. Sometimes that's the worst person to name.
They're already going to be upset.
Oh, yeah. 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 It happens. So sometimes the best choice is somebody outside of the family. It really is a job offer, and it's a big job. And somebody who's not emotionally connected, doesn't have any access to grind with other siblings or, unresolved conflicts with them or sibling rivalry. Sometimes it's better to go outside, and sometimes it's even better to hire a company to do this. Trust companies will do this for you. And that's a completely arm's length relationship. And most banks will offer that service depending on what level of assets you have in your relationship with the bank. So sometimes it's not always a family member who's the appropriate choice.
So what if I go through all of that due diligence and I choose the executor and executrix and I pass, and that person that I've chosen just turns the offer down and says no? What happens?
Absolutely,
then?
Yeah. And that goes back to the point I just made. Sometimes people do too much before they make the decision about whether or not they should be the executor. The very first thing you should do is, well, you've got to deal with the funeral, and you've got to have, you can do an investigation of, you know, where's the will? Where are this person's assets? Dealing with the remains. Of course, those things can be done. But then you should sit with a lawyer soon and say, look, I'm an executor. What is involved? What are the risks? Even if you've said yes to the person, you have to say yes again after the person's gone. It's a job offer. That job offer crystallizes at the moment you die. The executor can say yes or no after that point. I have advised lots of clients in my 15-year career to run away from estates, to not administer the estate. And do not do it. Do not start doing it. There's no happy ending. There's not enough assets to pay off all the debts. Everybody's going to be unhappy with you. Walk away. Run away. Don't do it.
Wow.
And if you've done so much of the work, dealt with some assets, paid some creditors but not others, and you've gotten yourself, it's called intermeddling. If you've gotten yourself involved to a certain extent, sometimes you can be forced to finish the job, and it's not a happy job when you shouldn't be doing it. So see a lawyer early in the process, and hopefully it will run smoothly. If you decide not to do it, and it's not because the estate is a mess, but because maybe you're just not in the right place in your life and there's no other executor named in the will as a backup to you, the will is still valid. Any one of the beneficiaries under the will has the right then to apply for something called letters of administration with will annexed. It means there's a will, it's valid, but there's no competent and willing and able executor named in the will who's going to do the job. So somebody else has to do it, and it's somebody who has an interest in the estate, but the court has to authorize that person to do it.
So do the other beneficiaries or the other participants in the will have a voice in that choice?
They certainly do. I believe it goes from the highest interest beneficiary down to the lowest. If I remember correctly, I'd have to look it up for sure. But they do have a voice in who is going to do this job. But then once they've decided this person's going to do it, then their beneficiaries and that person is the administrator, which is another sort of like the executor,
okay,
the same role. So then they have to step aside and let that person do their job. Now, if they can't agree on who does it, then they're both free to say, I should be the person. No, I should be the person, and the judge can choose. Then that's a mess, and it'll get sorted out. But once the person is picked or selected or agreed upon, then they have to step aside and let that person do their job, just like the executor would had the executor accepted the appointment.
So let's talk about power of attorneys now. What an appreciation I have now for the executor or executrix position. But let's talk about power of attorneys. Can you talk about what they are? Can you explain them to us, how people get them, what their purpose is?
Absolutely. So we're switching now from estate planning. This is not estate planning. This is called incapacity planning. So there's two big areas of planning that I deal with. Estate planning is what happens after you die. Joint ownership. We're talking about beneficiary designations, having a will, organizing your information for your executor, choosing the right executor, updating your will, updating your planning. That's estate planning. Now, incapacity planning is who's going to look after me if I'm alive, but I'm unable to take care of myself. My executor under my will has no authority over my affairs until I've passed away. So who's going to take care of me? Who's going to step in and do it anyway? Because let's all face it, somebody's going to do it. It's what tools can I give to that person so I select who it is and make sure it's as easy as possible for the person who's going to be doing it anyways. Okay. So the power of attorney allows the person, the attorney, to step in and manage your business, property, finances, your money, and your debts. So it's not healthcare at all. It's who's going to sign my tax returns, pay my taxes, sell my house if I can't live in it anymore, sell my car, manage my business. That's the power of attorney. The other side of that, which you haven't asked about, but the other side of incapacity planning is a tool called a representation agreement. And that tool gives somebody the authority to be your voice if you're in a doctor's office and you can't appreciate the difference between treatment option A or B or C. And the doctor needs consent in order to pick A, B, or C. Also, it's the boss when you're unfortunately may have to be living in a place like Gateway or Jubilee or, you know, one of those places where your needs are taken care of on a day-to-day basis because you can't take care of yourself. What you eat, what you wear, who visits you, the activities you participate in, those are all incapacity planning decisions as well. And you can pick the boss of that job. And it can be the same person as your attorney or a different person. And they have to work together usually in order to take care of you during your lifetime.
This is a very trusted person.
Absolutely. A very big role to play, but a different role because your attorney and your representative, they're focused on taking care of a living person. They have to act in the best interest of that living person. They can't let their mind be clouded by, well, what is this person going to leave behind when they die? If they have to spend your last nickel to take care of you, they have to. And if that person is also a beneficiary of the estate, they have to make sure they're wearing their power of attorney hat during your lifetime and they're making the right decisions to take care of you, even if those decisions end up dissipating the eventual estate for that person and their brothers and sisters. So you have to be very careful. And having a good planning lawyer involved at that stage is important to make sure those different roles are explained clearly and that the people that are doing these jobs don't get themselves into conflict of interest.
Thank you so much for your time today, Trevor.
You're very welcome.
That is all for today. We'll talk again soon.
A half-hour financial advice program, Tune Up with Deb, is produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George. Deb Ross is an accredited financial counselor with Intune Financial Solutions in Prince George. Be listening for Tune Up with Deb each week at this time. For previous shows or more information on Intune Financial Solutions, visit intunefinancial.ca.